The SEA Files, the ultimate Seahawks podcast with Nate Lundy.
And welcome in. It is time for another edition of the podcast. So much to be able to talk about. All the action from week two. We'll be breaking it down. Offense, defense, all the injuries to talk about. Speaking of injuries and around the league, we will go around the league with the coach, Brian Billick. He joins us as well, as he always does each week, to give us his analysis on what happened in week two and even looking ahead to week three. And then this week in overtime from Sports Illustrated and Monday Morning Quarterback, Jenny Ventris joins us to be able to go through our six-pack of questions. But as always, we kick things off with the big interview. Let's get to it.
The big interview.
You find him on Twitter at TimWeaver84, covering the Seahawks for Cover 32. It is Tim Weaver who joins us. Tim, as we get ready to talk Seahawks, I guess we could ask the question that's on everybody's mind around the NFL. What the heck was that? Should we start there in terms of the reaction to the Seahawks game against the Rams?
Well, it shouldn't come as any surprise if you've been watching the Seahawks and the Rams the last 2 years. This team has given them more trouble than anyone else in the NFL. I believe they've won four of the last five now. There's a lot that goes into it. I think part of it is that Jeff Fisher, for some reason, he takes this game seriously, much more so than others. It's basically the Rams Super Bowl. You know, they wanted to come out in their new stadium and get a win. No, none of this is a surprise at all. When they published the schedule, I predicted the Rams would win 6-3. No touchdowns, a lot of controversy, lots of flags, lots of ugliness. So it's really not a surprise. But what it comes down to is the Rams are strongest where the Seahawks are weakest. Their defensive line is incredible. They've invested a lot of money, a lot of early round draft picks to make that unit really, really strong. And at the same time, the Seahawks offensive line has been in decline since Super Bowl 48. And it wasn't really that great to begin with. That's always kind of been their Achilles heel. But all five starters are gone from that team now. And this year, Tom Cable basically had to start over from scratch. And that's not generally a good idea. It takes a lot more than talent and size to build a good offensive line. You need to have continuity and experience, and this group just doesn't have that, and it's showing through right now.
Do you think that the trajectory for them is a positive one, Tim, or do you think that they're going to struggle for months?
I think they're going to struggle for at least the first 2 months. The same thing happened last year. If you recall, the Seahawks started off really bad. I think they were 2-4 at one point. They just couldn't protect Wilson. They couldn't get the running lanes that they needed. But this happens every year. They continually reshuffle this offensive line, and it drives you crazy from a fan standpoint because continuity is very important. But last year, they got together around week 8, week 9 after the bye, and Wilson just went on this incredible streak. I think he finished the last 7 games with 24 touchdowns and one interception. So when they protect him, when he has a pocket to work with, he can be the best quarterback in the league, but they just need to do a better job of doing that for him.
What do you think it is about Jeff Fisher against the Seahawks? I mean, you talked about the fact that, you know, the matchups, that this is just, it tends to favor the Rams in terms of their strength versus the Seahawks' weaknesses. But this also seems to be, as you said, something with Jeff Fisher as well in terms of how he prepares for this game. Can you put your finger on it?
I really wish that I could. I would send Pete Carroll an email right away and let him know what to prepare for, because I do not understand it on many levels. It's a mediocre team. It's completely imbalanced. I think Case Keenum played worse week one at quarterback than anyone else in the league. I thought the Seahawks would shut them out. They held them out of the end zone, which is no big surprise there. But what happened last year is they ran a lot of trick plays. It's like they need to win this game for some reason. It's just more important to them than it is to the Seahawks. This felt like their Super Bowl, where it's week two for the Seahawks. Yes, it's disappointing to lose a road game in your division, but it's really not that big of a deal. The Seahawks can go on to win 11 or 12 games yet this year, and the Rams, their ceiling is still 7-9. I know Jeff Fisher said he doesn't want any more of that 7-9 nonsense, but I think they'll be lucky to go 6-10, to be honest. So I honestly have no idea why they get up so much for this game and what they're doing, but the Seahawks need to figure out eventually, because they're not going anywhere.
How much of this do you chalk up, Tim, to Russell Wilson dealing with this ankle and the fact that this could be something he's got to deal with all season long?
Oh, he was huge. He obviously was nowhere close to 100%. And anyone who's sprained their ankle can tell you that they're tricky. You can walk on it one day and it's perfectly fine. The next, you're in excruciating pain. Right now, it looks like Wilson, part of that latter camp, he's in a lot of pain. He can't move very well. And that's key to his game. He's not like Eli Manning, where he's just going to stand there and wait for routes to develop. He's got to be able to move around and shovel his feet. And most importantly, he needs to be able to escape because he doesn't have a good offensive line. And, part of the problem is the last 2 weeks, they faced really, really good front fours. Miami, the week before, they had Mario Williams and Cameron Wake wreaking havoc too. But he needs to get healthy, I think. It would be perfectly fine to sit him against the Niners or perhaps even longer. I think it was a mistake to put him out there given his condition this week. I know he was a full participant in practice and he's never missed a game before, but I think it would be wiser just to punt a little bit and let him get back to 100% because he shouldn't have to take the kind of risk that he does on a bum ankle right now, given that line. If he had a front line like the Saints have, it'd be a different story, but I just think he needs a little bit more time to recover.
Looking at the running game, is this to the point now where this is Kristen Michael's job? Thomas Rawls struggled, obviously, but is this Kristen Michael's job, or is it going to continue to be a platooning situation? What do you expect out of the running game?
I think Pete Carroll's going to try to make it democratic because Thomas Rawls was excellent last year. He led the league in yards per carry, but it's really starting to look like Kristen Michael's year. He had the late fumble, which looks bad from optics perspective, but you can't put that on him. He's had a really, really great year. He averaged 6 yards per carry yesterday. And given how bad the blocking was up front, that was pretty remarkable. He had a few runs in the third quarter that I think normally would spark a scoring drive, but there's just no passing game there. You can't put it all on Michael. I think he's been fantastic. And for Michael, I'd be starting him next week. I think he's the hot hand. You have to go with him.
When you look at the we talked about the ankle with Russell Wilson and you know whether or not that's going to keep bothering him. Does he need to sit and take a break? Those kinds of things. But I would say if he is going to be out there, it would seem to me, Tim, like he needs to be making, for lack of a better way to put it, some easier throws, things that don't require him to be on the move and the like. Do they have the receiving core to help him out in that way? Are they getting enough out of guys like Jimmy Graham or the slot receivers to make that happen?
They absolutely have the personnel. I think where he's failed is the play calling, which is nothing new to Seahawks fans. Darrell Bevell, for whatever reason, he's never really gotten the short passing game off the ground. There was one hitch route I remember to Baldwin yesterday. I thought, oh, that's exactly what they need. And he hit Jimmy Graham a couple times in a row up the middle on these quick hits. But that was about it for the entire game. When you don't have good pass protection and you're not getting a running game going, you can't rely on these deep routes. I think the only thing the Seahawks had going was verticals to Tyler Lockett the whole game. You've got to break in some more intermediate and short passes, and Bevell just hasn't really integrated that in all his time as the coordinator there. So they've got to figure that out, and they've got to take some pressure off of Wilson by allowing him to get the ball out quicker, I think.
In talking to 49ers folks already early this week, you know, there's sort of this cautious optimism, I guess, when it comes to the Niners in this game this weekend because they feel like they aren't really sure what to see out of the Seahawks. As you look at it, Tim, what are you going to be looking for this Sunday afternoon?
Well, it's going to be back to the trenches again. The Niners have a lot of holes on their roster, and I think they, at best, are probably a 4-12 team. But look, they've got Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner, both Oregon products at defensive end, and that's going to play into the Seahawks' weakness again. They've been really bad at left tackle. Mina Kimes tweeted out yesterday, Bradley's not playing so well, which pretty much sums it up. They really screwed up by not upgrading at left tackle. As mediocre as Russell Okung may have been, so well is really not working out. So if they can get pressure on Wilson the same way that the Rams did, hey, man, anything can happen. It's the NFL. So you've got to be really careful about protecting Wilson. But overall, the Seahawks are at home. Niners, the talent difference, I think, is just a little too great. I would be shocked if they could pull one off. But right now, there's a lot of questions going around Wilson's ankle and what he's able to do.
Do you expect another low-scoring game like what we've seen so far, the game against the Dolphins to start off the year? Obviously, only 3 points on the board and 12 combined against the Rams. Do you think it's another low-scoring affair, or does it buck the trend, Tim?
I think it'll be low scoring. I think Pete Carroll has Chip Kelly's offense pretty well. in hand. And when Philadelphia came a couple of years ago, it was a pretty nasty affair, and I expect much of the same because he doesn't have the same level of talent that he did when he was with the Eagles. I think it's going to regress from there. And the Seahawks offense, just it looks like it's going to struggle for at least the next several weeks until they figure out something with that offensive line, or they can get Jimmy Graham more involved on these quick hits. They're going to struggle, and I think I would be taking the under for the next few weeks when the Seahawks are involved.
Tim Weaver with us on Twitter at TimWeaver84, covering the Seahawks for Cover 32. Tim, as always, appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank you.
There goes Tim. Coming up next, the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
It is time, as always, for us to go around the NFL, and to do that, we are joined by the coach, Brian Billick. He's presented by SeatGeek, reminding you that you can visit SeatGeek.com or you can download the SeatGeek app. Always make sure that you, your friends, your family are getting the best deal on tickets. Doesn't matter if it's a sporting event or a concert, SeatGeek helps you out with the amazing technology of Deal Score, so make sure that you have the SeatGeek app on your phone the next time you and your family are ready to head out to the big game or to a concert. Coach, let's start with Monday Night Football, where we know that Jay Cutler injured his hand, was not able to go back into the game, but more of the talk seems to be about whether or not Jay Cutler is really the right guy or the right future for Chicago. I suppose we could argue that what other choice do they have? What is your take on what you've seen from Jay Cutler and from the Bears?
Well, yeah, it's a tough question. It's always difficult to separate the play of a quarterback from what's going around him. Yeah, it's been a tough go for Jay Cutler, not the least of which is the fact that he's had something along the line of six or seven different coordinators, therefore six or seven basically different systems over the time he's been in Denver over the last 8 years. So I don't know of any quarterback that's going to function well in that situation. It may be time for Chicago to move on. What's gone under the bridge, so to speak, by way of Jay Cutler, it just hasn't been successful. This is not a very good football team. So for them to totally reshuffle the deck and try to move forward might be the thing to do.
When you look on the other side of the ball, Coach, you've got two games under Carson Wentz's belt and two wins. Granted, one against Chicago, one against Cleveland. However, what have you seen from the rookie that's impressed you the most?
Yeah, I mean, the schedule makers certainly made it certainly an easier path for this rookie to start out when talking about the two teams he's had to face. But having said that, you can't help but be impressed with what Carson Wentz has done. He seems to be very calm in the pocket, so to speak. You know, if you want to be nitpicky, third down has not been still real productive. I think he was 3 of 10 in the first game. He's 3 of 15 this game. So sustaining drives is something. But that will come as the rookie continues to mature in the system. And also the fact that the Eagles are staying committed to the run as best they can. You know, they ran it better than 30 times and only had 100 yards. But it shows you that they're trying to keep that balance for Carson Wentz. He threw it 37 times in the first game, 34 times last night. That's ambitious for a rookie quarterback. Now, we'll see going forward whether they maintain this. The schedule's obviously going to get a little bit tougher for them as they go down the way. You know, obviously in Cleveland and Chicago having their difficulties as they try to, you know, piece some wins together here. But we're going to find out, you know, the fact that he did it at home and the fact that he did it, you know, on the road. We're going to find out this week because all but at home, they're going to face the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he's going to go across from Ben Roethlisberger.
Coach, when you look at what the Patriots have been doing without Tom Brady, what's the most impressive part of it to you?
Well, anytime you lose your quarterback and then your backup quarterback, of course, we kind of get used to it with New England, don't we? We just kind of think they're going to overcome anything. This will be an interesting challenge on a short week, playing a very good Houston team. Brissett, the young rookie, obviously came in, you know, they spotted him 24-point lead, so obviously life was pretty good at that point. The key for him, and obviously Bill Belichick knows this, is to let that talent around you win for you. If they can get Gronkowski back, they have Martellus Bennett, this Julian Edelman, those are some pretty good inside targets to help get the ball out of your hand quickly. I imagine we're going to see a lot of sprints and boots and waggles by Brissett to get out from behind the pocket. But this is going to be a challenge for you now because Houston, all but at home for New England, where they're almost unbeatable, the good thing is the cavalry is on the way in a couple of weeks when they're going to get Brady back.
When you look at what the Buffalo Bills have been doing, there are a lot of folks that believe this is Rex Ryan's sort of last rodeo here, and that the Bills have not been living up to the expectation of the fans or of the team. What are you seeing out of the Bills, and is this Rex Ryan's last run?
Well, the fact that he came in from a division opponent after he got fired from New York and the expectations took over the number one rated defense in the league, and it has not performed well. And the fact that now that they're 0-2 and they've got Arizona and all but New England. Now, you know, it's Tom Brady-less New England. It may be a Jimmy Garoppolo-less New England. If they should struggle and lose to Arizona and then somehow at New England, and again, New England's a tough place to play, particularly without those two individuals, and lose, you know, an 0-4 Buffalo Bills team, you've already fired your offensive coordinator. It's going to be a tough road to hoe for Buffalo.
What are you seeing that are the struggles right now for the Seattle Seahawks, Coach? Very shocking, I suppose, for just about anybody to see the L.A. Rams wind up beating them this past weekend. They just don't seem to be in sync on offense. What are you seeing with the Seahawks?
Well, we saw this early last year. Remember, they started 0-2 last year, but I think it begins with the offensive line. They're struggling on the offensive line, so therefore they're not running the ball well. They're not protecting Russell Wilson as well. Russell Wilson finally will be likely a plus 500 throw quarterback this year, and I think he's up to it. Up to this point, he's been under 450 throws every year. Why? Because they play great defense and run the ball. Defense is not playing as well. Solid, but not as well as we've seen, particularly in their Super Bowl runs. So, yeah, it's a cascading set of events. It doesn't mean it can't get better if Russell Wilson's ankle gets a little bit better, if they can shore up the offensive line a little bit. But, again, the Seattle Seahawks teams that have gone on this great run, it was anchored by league-leading defense, top-five rushing attack, and they have neither one of those right now.
And are they missing, you talked about the running game, is it not just missing the running game but missing Marshawn Lynch specifically? Are they missing that sort of, you know, downhill Mack truck rushing attack?
Yeah, I think the physicality of Marshawn Lynch was a mentality that played into the formula for them. You get a little bit extra from Russell Wilson on the edges when he scrambles around. And so I think the way they're running the ball right now, and again, it goes back to the offensive line. I just don't think that they're performing at a level that lends itself. I mean, you talk about that called smash-mouth physical play. That's not what Seattle is right now.
When the Vikings managed to get the win to open up the brand new stadium, one of the comments that I had made, Coach, a couple of weeks ago was that this might be the best team that Sam Bradford's ever been on, and so maybe we will finally see the Sam Bradford that everybody expected coming out of college. Did you see that in the home win on Sunday night?
Yeah, when you begin with the defense, the way they're playing defense, which is just spectacular, you know, and when you look at this defense, you got to love it. Outside of Matt Barr, you name somebody on the Minnesota Vikings defense. Linville Joseph is obviously pretty good, but they don't have those marquee, okay, yeah, they're anchoring their defense. They're just playing great team defense. Mike Zimmer gets a lot of credit for that. Depending upon when Adrian Peterson can come back, they haven't been running the ball pretty well. I think that goes back to the offensive line to a degree. I think it also goes back to the fact that when you go back and look last year, Adrian Peterson ran for better than 1,400 yards. His best game was against the Oakland Raiders. I went back and looked at that game. He was in the eye. They had two tight ends. They were playing a physical running game. And the fact that they're doing more and more out of the gun, I don't know that suits the running style, certainly not of Adrian Peterson. I'm not sure they wouldn't be better served to get back into the eye and two tight ends, let Sam Bradford hand the ball off or play action fake and send them, you know, throw the ball down the field. And with that great defense, that can be a good winning formula for this team because they're clearly a good football team.
On the other side of it from Sunday night, the Packers. Coach, what are you seeing that you like and what has you concerned with Green Bay?
Well, you know, everybody thought when Jordy Nelson came back, you know, life would be fine, that everything was going to be okay at that point. I think there's a little more to it. I think the defense, obviously, there's still some question marks there. Aaron Rodgers doesn't, although he's still making some just spectacular throws. The fact that, and the fact that he goes back to Minnesota playing so good on defense, Aaron Rodgers under 60%. He's not having the efficiency that we're used to seeing with Aaron Rodgers. With the running game, you know, Eddie Lacy, the slimmed down Eddie Lacy, is not necessarily generating the productivity you'd like to see. I'm not sure I wouldn't go back. It's not my place to second guess Mike McCarthy. He's an excellent play caller. the up-tempo, high-paced Green Bay. They like that no huddle. I'm not sure they might not be better off going back to a more structured offense, control the clock a little bit more, and let Aaron Rodgers operate from that standpoint.
Speaking of defense, through the first 2 weeks, we've seen the New York Giants give up only 32 points, 19 to the Cowboys, and, of course, 13 this past week in holding the Saints in check. Obviously, the Giants have been impressive through 2 weeks with this new revamped defense.
Yeah, it's nice to see that $200 million can buy you something in today's economy. They went out and spent a bunch of money on that defense. They're playing like a top-10 defense compared to last year, which, you know, that's what they needed to approach, where they were literally last in the league. So that's quite a jump, going from last in the league in defense to jumping into the top-10. Now, we've only got two games, so we got a long way to go. But it was obviously money well spent. And then when you throw in, obviously, this emerging dynamic wide receiving core with OBJ, and obviously it's good to see Cruz back into it, and this young man Shepard, the rookie. That's quite a threesome. You'd have to go back in the Giants, back to the 2011 team when they had Plexico Burress, and Victor Cruz was a part of that. Go back even further to 2007. This is clearly the best wide receiving core that we've seen out of New York.
Always great stuff with the coach, Brian Billick. He's brought to us each and every week on the NFL Files by our friends at SeatGeek. Make sure you've got that SeatGeek app on your phone or visit SeatGeek.com so you can make sure you, your family, friends, always getting the best deal on tickets. Check out Deal Score that makes sure that the tickets you've got, you can look at that stadium view and know that you're getting the best deal. Coach, appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
Stay tuned. Overtime coming up next.
Overtime.
It is time for overtime, and to do that this week from Sports Illustrated, a Monday morning quarterback, Jenny Vrentas joins us. Jenny, we do a six-pack of questions here in overtime, so let's start here. Question number one, are you on the Carson Wentz bandwagon?
I'm halfway on. I think the first two wins, it's great to get off the 2-0 start. I think he and Doug Peterson and the offensive coaching staff have done a great job. I think he's still, like any young quarterback, still has a lot of room to grow. I hate to make any judgments after two games, but certainly how quickly he's gotten into the game and been able to make some of the throws and decisions he's made, he's certainly impressed me.
All right, so you're not on the bus quite yet, but you might be standing at the bus stop is what you're saying.
There you go. That's a great way to say it.
Okay, good. Question number two, Jenny, what right now do you think is the biggest problem facing the NFL?
Health and safety. I think it's, ultimately will determine the future of the game, how we view the game. Are we comfortable watching the game, sending our kids to play the game? So I think how the NFL and the sport of football handle health and safety over the next 10 to 15 years is critical in determining the direction of the sport.
All right. Question number three. Who right now is your current NFL player that's your favorite to interview?
Favorite player to interview? That is a great question.
Or maybe just a favorite one you've done recently. I know it's hard to single one out.
Favorite one. Right. It is hard to single one out. I always enjoy visiting with the Cardinals. They have a lot of really interesting, honest guys. And I was out there in August, and I think Tyrann Mathieu is just so fun to interview. The energy that he brings his team on the field, he just makes him so interesting off the field to talk to as well. So he's definitely a guy that I really enjoy talking with.
All right. Question number five for us here, question number four, excuse me, as we go through. Is Rex Ryan overrated as a head coach?
I've covered Rex for a long time. I do not question his ability at all as a defensive-minded coach. Now, head coach is a big difference, but I still don't believe that he's overrated because I think he gets a lot of criticism that he doesn't necessarily deserve. I think he can win. I do not believe that he is on the hot seat as much as people want to say this year. So, no, I do not think he's overrated as a head coach.
As you've followed the question number five here, as you followed the AFC East, there's been a lot of discussion about Darrelle Revis and whether or not he has faded as a defender. Do you buy into that? Is it time for him to slide over to safety? What's your take on Darrelle Revis?
He is certainly not playing at the same level he played at in 2009, 2010. That was when he was at the top of the mountain. So when we're used to seeing a player who lines up one-on-one with a receiver and man coverage all the time, very often with no help at all, that's so rare and unusual. So watching him now, he's not that same player. That much is clear. I don't believe it's time to put him safety yet. I think he can still be effective as a cornerback. It's just a different kind of cornerback. He's not that kind of guy you can stick on an island anymore. And that's okay. There aren't many of those guys in the game. But I think he can still be an effective cornerback.
All right, final question in our six-pack of questions here for you, Jenny. We love to do this early in the season, so we might as well do it here. If you had to hand out the NFL's MVP award after the first 2 weeks, who would you give it to?
MVP award after the first 2 weeks. Well, it's not a player, but I'd give it to Belichick for winning two games. But that's coach of the year, and you asked MVP award. I'm going with Von Miller.
All right. Well, see, and you're not far off, because last year on my radio show, I actually said that I thought the MVP of the league was Wade Phillips. So for you to give it to Bill Belichick after 2 weeks kind of makes sense, right?
Right. But, yeah, I mean – that Denver defense, Miller's a good choice. I know a defensive player hasn't won since Lawrence Taylor, but I'm sticking with Miller right now.
There she is, Jenny Ventress from Sports Illustrated Monday Morning Quarterback. You find her on Twitter at Jenny Ventress, V-R-E-N-T-A-S. Jenny, appreciate the time for joining us on the NFL Files. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Really appreciate Jenny's time. That'll do it. That wraps up our podcast for this week. Make sure you're checking out all the archives posted up at audioboom.com. All you got to do is search NFL Files, listen for your favorite team or for any of the teams around the NFL. My name is Nate Lundy. Talk to you next week.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.